From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
The film has gotten a lot further than they wished. They tried to stop it. They couldn't. They tried to stop it from getting nominated to the Oscar. They couldn't. They tried to have me arrested. It didn't work.
6 years ago, Lebanese director Ziad Doueri broke the law and offended many in his country by shooting a movie in Israel. That film was banned in Lebanon and throughout the Middle East. Doueri's latest movie, The Insult, had nothing to do with Israel, but he still has enemies who don't want his work to be seen. Doueri tells us about his drive to continue making movies in the Middle East and admits that the horrible insult that sets off the drama in his new film was based on words he had said in real life. But first on the News Banter, turns out Michelle Williams didn't get all the money in the world for doing reshoots on Ridley Scott's latest film. Mark Wahlberg, on the other hand... Stay tuned. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my partner in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter from New York this week. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So the disparity in pay has been an issue that we heard discussed on the red carpet at the Globes when people challenged E! Because Kat Sadler had quit over being paid less than her male counterparts. But that has really blown up now with this disparity that emerged between Michelle Williams and Mark Wahlberg for reshoots on the Ridley Scott film All the Money in the World. We had heard that Michelle Williams would get less than Mark Wahlberg, who is considered the bigger commercial star. But when it has emerged that what he got was $1.5 million, where she got very little, like, pocket change, wow, this is a bad time for that to be revealed, because people are asking, how is it possible when Michelle Williams has much the bigger role in this film about John Paul Getty, and she plays the mother of this young man who is kidnapped, how is it possible that she gets borderline nothing, and Mark Wahlberg, whose role is smaller in the film, walks away with this pretty big payday?
Yeah, I agree. The optics here are really bad. Ridley Scott, the director, said that everybody got together and decided to do the reshoots for nothing. And what we're finding out now is that that wasn't true. And that while Michelle Williams had agreed to do it for almost nothing, Mark Wahlberg chose to use the situation relating to Kevin Spacey dropping out and the chaos that that put the film in. He used that situation to leverage more money for reshoots for himself. And if it's $1.5 million, which is what the number that we're hearing, that's a pretty significant payday for something that your castmates are doing for free. And that's where it gets into the situation that just does not look good for him. And I think in retrospect, he's probably regretting pushing for this extra money.
I don't know. He has a reputation for driving a very tough bargain. He didn't do Silver Linings Playbook because Bradley Cooper would take the money that they had and he wanted more. And this just reinforces that. You know, it does splash back on him. It also splashes back on William Morris Endeavor, which represents both Mark Wahlberg and Michelle Williams. And, you know, the view is it possible that WME went to bat for Mark Wahlberg, who did this thing, as you point out, like taking advantage of a situation where he really had his boot on the throat of this movie? The movie would not be released without the reshoots. And meanwhile, did they let Michelle Williams take this little paltry payment? And, you know, I think that William Morris Endeavor has not addressed this. It's very awkward. I don't quite know how they even can. But we're getting all this mixed messaging. You know, I was told that Michelle Williams knew about the disparity, and yet we read in the New York Times that she did not know about the disparity. We were told that this payment was negotiated into Mark Wahlberg's contract, but it turns out not really, it wasn't. So the actors have not addressed this publicly, and it just has created this aura that something is wrong that nobody has been able to sort of clarify in a coherent manner.
And it's especially awkward for William Morris, as you mentioned. You know, often agents don't talk to each other about, you know, negotiating for clients who are in the same movies. But it seems like this movie, which was kind of a package that was put together and Wahlberg's name was very instrumental in getting the financing, it seems like they were very involved in all aspects. So I find it hard to believe that they did not know that this was going on. But, you know, the flip side of that is, if you're an agent, sometimes you get fired if you are not pushing for your client to make the money that they want to make. And I don't begrudge anyone, male or female, for pushing for the exact amount that you feel that you are worth. But in this situation, in this climate, a star of the caliber that Mark Wahlberg is, who has made, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in the movie business, to have this come out in this environment that he leveraged the situation, it's pretty bad.
And Michelle Williams is an award-winning actress, as many people have pointed out. Yes, Mark Wahlberg is more commercial, but she has been nominated for Oscar. She has been in quality projects. So, you know, it's not like she's nobody. And I think, you know, I'm seeing people on social media saying, you know, you should quit. You should fire William Morris Endeavor. And honestly, I guess I would be a little surprised. Maybe she won't, but it feels like maybe she, I'm sure the other agencies are on the line right now saying, we would never let this bad thing happen to you.
Oh, of course, but it all comes down to the relationship she has with her agent and what was discussed. I mean, for all we know, they presented this to her and she said, no, I want to do it for free. I don't want to ask for more money. I mean, I have no idea, but
not normal.
No, but I would love it if someone would explain that. I mean, because there's a lot of people asking a lot of questions.
I also would like somebody credibly to explain it, you know, because right so far I've heard explanations that are off the record and then turn out to be contradicted 5 seconds later. I mean, if she agreed, my question is, let's say she did agree and knew, as I was told she did, you know, there's a way that you can agree in an open-hearted manner, and then there's another way where you can agree because your movie is held hostage, and it's like, if you don't agree, we're killing this movie, you are killing this movie. And I will just say, Ridley Scott, a very recent guest on this program, said that he had about $10 million to put into those reshoots. Mark Wahlberg ate up $1.5 million of those, and, you know, I can't imagine that that sits well with people who are struggling to get this thing pulled together and make it something other than an epic disaster, you know?
Especially after Ridley Scott said that everybody agreed to do it for free.
Yeah, I don't think he should have done that. On our show, I will note, I asked him if everyone was all in, and he said Michelle Williams was definitely all in. And I'm looking back and saying, huh, maybe I didn't quite notice how he skittered over that. Meanwhile, the other story of the week, I think, is James Franco. We have seen James Franco trying to execute a strategy. He was wearing a Time's Up button at the Golden Globes. The Twitter dissent began with people calling him out on Twitter, Ali Sheedy, who subsequently deleted her tweets, but women started to come forward. He goes on first Colbert and then Seth Meyers' show and basically tries to maneuver by saying, I don't really know what is wrong here, but I certainly don't. I mean, he's trying to actually manage this by saying, I regret anything if I've done something, but these allegations are not accurate. And what happens, of course, is then you get more women coming forward when you say something like that. If you say it's not accurate, you're begging people to come forward who might have hung back. And, you know, this is a dodge that we're hearing a lot, not just in this context of sexual harassment or misconduct, but across the board, this is not accurate, with a complete failure to say why, what's not accurate. And James Franco has pointedly refused to do that. And that, to me, always creates, again, a not good optics.
The awkward thing here is that voting for the Oscar nominations finished Friday. So these allegations came out the same day that Oscar voting ended. So there's a good chance that many of these voters had already cast their votes. Thus, he could be up at the Oscars nominated for The Disaster Artist, even amid all these allegations.
Yeah, and does he go? I don't know. Wait, does he take off the button that says a time's up? I don't know. It's an interesting thing to watch people try to work out their PR strategies and to see whether they rise or fall. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. The new film, The Insult, begins with a testy exchange in a Beirut neighborhood. Tony is a Lebanese Christian who runs an auto repair shop and resents the presence of Palestinian refugees in his country. Yasser is one of those refugees who happens to have a job as a construction foreman in Tony's neighborhood. The trouble starts when Yasser gets splashed with water because of an illegal jury-rigged drain pipe on Tony's balcony. When Yasser decides to fix the pipe without asking permission, Tony smashes the repair job, and thus begins an argument that spirals into a national cause in a country that is deeply divided along religious lines. Despite controversy surrounding The Insult's director, Lebanon submitted the film to compete for an Academy Award this year. It's shortlisted for Best Foreign Language Film, a first for a Lebanese movie. The insult's director is Ziad Duwairi, a secular Muslim who grew up in Beirut. He became a U.S. citizen after moving to San Diego to go to film school. He's since gone back to the Middle East, where he made the 2012 film The Attack. For that movie, Duwairi shot in Israel and included Israeli cast and crew members. Simply by going to Israel, Duwairi broke Lebanese law, and The Attack was banned in Lebanon. Since then, he's been in the crosshairs of the BDS movement, which calls for a boycott of Israel and seeks to blacklist anyone who does business there, including artists and filmmakers. Though The Insult was filmed entirely in Lebanon, Duwairi is still a target of the boycott movement.
You know, when I think about what went into writing The Attack and now this one, this film, The Insult, I'm trying to figure out what was the psychology behind it. Probably because I've witnessed as early as I remember acts that are violent and act of not fairness. It's in Arabic, if you want to translate it, you stepped on my rights or you took away my rights. I remember as far as possible on very silly incident, whether it's on the street when I was growing up as a child, when I was going to school, we get stopped by checkpoints. We had Palestinian occupation, Syrian occupation, Israeli occupation, Christian occupation. When you have such a limbo, so much chaos, something registered in your mind. And you feel during wartime, you feel like a lot of rights, human rights, gets taken away. And probably as early on, I started feeling that it's not fair. The insult is probably the result of seeking what's fair, I think.
But I read somewhere that you had had an incident, because The Insult begins with this person trying to fix a drain pipe off of a balcony, and that you had an incident like that where somebody...
That's right.
And you, as I read it, I mean, this insult is a Christian, a Lebanese Christian insulting a Palestinian in a very nasty way.
Yeah.
And you said you had said almost those exact words.
I didn't say almost. No, I said those words.
100%. But those are terrible words. I'm trying to remember. What did you say? Let's just ask it in plain language.
I was watering my plants and then the water fell. And then one of the workers beneath my balcony in Beirut, that's just 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago, he yelled out and he says, you know, he started yelling because the water was falling on him. And then we had a heated exchange, and I told him, I noticed from his accent that he was Palestinian. So I told him, I wish Ariel Sharon wiped you all out.
That is I can't imagine a worse thing to say. Right.
Yeah, I said it because I said it. You know, my wife at that time told me, how could you tell such a thing to a Palestinian? Why don't you go down and apologize? So I went down and I told him, listen, I apologize. I didn't mean what I said. But the guy was so hurt. And that's it. That was the end of the story. 2 days later, I woke up and I was thinking, what if a story starts with such a silly incident and that phrase is used, but instead of it getting resolved, it gets complicated and gets even more and more complicated as it starts going to court because the guy asked for an apology, etc., until it hits the presidency. Halfway through the film, Lebanon is on the brink of a civil war. This is how the idea started. And I start asking myself, is this credible? Yes, it is credible. In the Middle East, you can start a war because of words. Words are loaded. But what I've been asking myself in the last few weeks, because journalists are asking me those questions, what was behind it? I started thinking, finally, why did I do it?
It was the feeling of unfairness.
I think so, because the film is about a guy looking for justice. He believes his rights were taken away, he hasn't been heard, and he's going to go to court system to try to get his rights back. And I'm still in the process of figuring it out. I am not 100% sure, but I believe that plays such an important role.
One of the things that's haunted this movie is the previous movie, The Attack.
Yes.
You make The Attack and you do, I mean, it's clear from watching The Insult as well, that however much the Christians hate the Palestinians or whatever in Lebanon, there's one enemy that they all hate. It's like the old song, I don't know if you're familiar with the old Tom Lehrer song where he sings, everybody hates the Jews.
Right, that's right.
That's who everybody hates. And so you go to Israel, which is not legal under your Lebanese passport.
No, it's illegal. It's illegal from a Lebanese perspective.
Right, but you have a U.S. passport.
I have a U.S. passport. I went to Tel Aviv with my U.S. passport.
How did you have a U.S. passport?
I lived here such a long time. I immigrated to the States in 1983. I went to college and I work here 18 years.
Right.
So I became a U.S. citizen.
Yeah.
And I went to Tel Aviv with the American passport to shoot that movie.
You have dual citizenship.
Yes.
And you informed the Lebanese authorities, yes. Hey, going to go to Israel.
Right. I didn't expect that they would answer me back, but I just wanted to make clear to them that, because most of the people who go to Israel, they get accused of spying for Israelis.
Right.
But at least I wanted to clear that suspicion off my back. And when I came back, I did not hide it. I could have. And then the BDS movement started their campaign against the movie.
This is the Boycott Israel movement.
Boycott divestment. They are the one who actually convinced the state, the Lebanese state, to ban my previous film, The Attack, which was banned.
So you had said earlier that you don't want to be asked, you know, philosophical questions that are beyond your expertise. But I have seen you speaking out, I assume it was on Lebanese TV, against the Israeli boycott.
I am against boycotting filmmakers and artists and rock musicians and everything. You know, I grew up all my life in a very left-wing liberal family.
Right.
Who fought for the Palestinian cause, literally fought, not just...
Which is why I was surprised you said that to the Palestinian in your incident. It sounds like something your parents would have been very shocked that you say that to a Palestinian.
My parents were shocked, but they know that I'm very reactionary also.
Okay, a little complicated. You know, I'll try to keep up.
I say things. I've always said things. If I want to insult, I could...
You're very lacerating, yes.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. You know, you don't necessarily mean that, you know, but sometimes I know how to say things that hurts people feeling a lot.
I didn't mean to divert you, but you were brought up in a liberal family.
I was brought up in a very...
Sympathy for Palestinian
plight. Sympathy is an understatement. My parents were militant, very much. You know, I was raised with certain belief about the Jewish state or certain belief about the Israeli state, and I'm not exonerating them. We're at war. But as filmmakers, I am curious about the other side. You know, I married a Christian girl.
Yes, I think that's speaks volumes.
I married a Christian girl who was part of the right-wing movement. But there was a curiosity to the opposite. I'm always curious to know what's on the other side.
Right. Now, when you're looking to make a movie like The Attack, who finances that? You're doing
The Attack was financed by the French government, the Belgian government, a little bit came from the U.S., and by the Qatar at that time. The insult was done by the French, the Belgian, the American, and Lebanon was the main financier.
Even though you had done the bad thing of going to Israel, Lebanon was willing to finance your movie.
Individuals in Lebanon.
Individuals.
Yes.
It's not like a state fund
or
anything.
No, there's no state fund in Lebanon.
There's nothing like that.
But the Lebanese state took me by surprise for the second time when they allowed the insult to be released. You see, when we wrote it, we were unanimously sure it's not going to pass.
Why? Because of the previous film?
Because of the previous one. Mm-hmm. First, I have, you know, there's a dark spot on my past because I've been to Israel. But the second one, because of the subject matter. When the executive producer in Lebanon read the script, she told me, Ziad, this film will never be released here. I said, I know, it's a risk we're taking. I spoke to the investors and I said, we're going to make a movie that might never be released in Lebanon. And they were all aware and we all went for it. And when the film came out, we had to run it by the government because they give you the permit to release it. And to my surprise, they let it pass. It took 3 months of negotiation.
Did you have to make concessions?
I did not make any concession. Listen, it's very interesting. Lebanon is a very peculiar place. Lebanon has always been a country that is not run by one single...
Right, there's this one single factionalized...
Idea. You always have to... The left have to cooperate with the right. The Christian have to cooperate with the Muslim. The Shiite with the Sunni. It's always been a very funny balance.
Yeah, it makes your head spin, really.
Which what saved us somehow. That's why Lebanon is different from the other Arab countries around, that Lebanon still have this mix because of our constitution. It protects everybody's rights. Now, sometimes it gets shoved to the side, but we're still a place where you can freely express yourself. And I was very, very happy because it allowed us to release the film. It allowed the government to select it for their Oscar nomination. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
Right.
You know, otherwise we wouldn't be talking about it.
It's kind of surprising.
It's a big surprise. Very big surprise.
I mean, you're not only examining wounds of Lebanon in this film, but there's the overhang of the previous film.
Look, the insult, when I wrote it with Joelle,
That was your wife at the time. Although I think your marriage was not hanging together at that time.
We were writing it while we were divorcing, actually. And we still continue to write together.
So, which is unusual.
Well, we have a lot of things in common. I mean, you know, we have a child together and, you know, we come from very opposite camp.
Right.
But we are very similar in the way we view the other camps. You know, she comes from a middle-class family. I come from a middle-class right. family. It was a great experience because she wrote, actually, just to let you know, Joelle wrote the scenes of the lawyer who was defending the Palestinians.
Who was the younger lawyer, the female lawyer, and you were the older male lawyer.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I was writing the enemy's phrases, and she was writing her enemy's dialogue. We switched places. It allows us to have some empathy.
Coming up after a short break, director Ziad Doueri tells us about getting arrested while trying to return to Lebanon from the Venice Film Festival. And he talks about getting his start as a cameraman for a first-time filmmaker on a strange, low-budget movie called Reservoir Dogs. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Today we're talking to Lebanese director Ziad Doueri about his film The Insult. The movie follows two men, a Palestinian refugee in Beirut and a Lebanese Christian, who get into a war of words that ends up becoming a cause celeb in a deeply divided country. Doueri is still persona non grata with some in the Middle East because of his 2012 film The Attack. That movie was shot in Israel, a violation of the law in Lebanon. Even though The Attack was released 6 years ago, the repercussions have followed Doueri and the Palestinian star of his new film, The Insult. Well, so you go to Venice with this film, mm-hmm. and your star, whose name you'll have to give me because...
Kamel Al-Basha.
He is a Palestinian.
That's right.
He is your star, and he is the first man from the Arab world to win Best Actor at the Venice...
First time in history.
Certainly the first Palestinian. And
no, I'm telling you, first time in the Arab world, an actor
in the Arab world, right.
Since Jesus. First guy wins the Best Actor at Venice Film
Festival. Congratulations to you and him.
He was very happy, yes.
And then they're supposed to show this film in...
Palestine.
Palestine, and...
They banned it.
They ban it.
That's right.
And you sit there and think...
That's right.
I mean, I saw him doing an interview when this incident... This is quite recent.
Yes. September.
Like October, September.
October.
And
right.
He is saying he can't believe it. You know, here this is something that he's bringing to his people.
That's right.
A victory that they never, ever had before. And they won't let it show
right.
because of the attack.
That's right.
The reason.
That's
so the loathing of the Israelis is so huge that because the director of the film several years earlier
right.
had been in Tel Aviv,
so that now
they're not showing it.
Yes, they condemn this film. Look, it's a totally illogical behavior that does not help their cause. The Palestinians need to show the world that we are fighting for democracy, we're fighting for freedom. Therefore, freedom of expression is fundamental. When you go and ban a movie, which has nothing to do with the previous movie that I've done, that's acting in a very stupid way. But sometimes people act irrationally. The BDS did not act in the right way. They totally screwed this one up. Totally. You know, I was so upset for Kamel. Kamel is an actor who actually spent 2 years in Israeli jail. He came out, never known. Small theater actor. I cast him on Skype. The guy is so humble and modest. This guy who has never done a movie before, first time, he goes back to Ramallah, to he's from Jerusalem. He wants to show it in Ramallah to share that prize with his people. And they said, no, you can't show it.
And then you come back to Lebanon from Venice and they detain you at the airport?
The BDS had filed a complaint against me and the army, the Lebanese army, had to follow procedure. You see, you can come today, contact the Lebanese army, and you say, I have proof that such and such person went to Israel. They have to investigate. Now, they didn't need to investigate because I've already sent them that letter 5 years ago. They had all the proof they needed, but that was a closed chapter. When the BDS movement filed a complaint and the army arrested me, I went into interrogation, and then I had to appear next day at the military tribunal. I
mean, what are they asking you? Did you make the film? Yes, I did.
I'll tell you something. Everything that they've asked, they've known it before. But now they heard it from me directly. I think the Lebanese government was a lot smarter than anyone. They just arrested me by procedure and then they let me go the next day. I felt it, looking at the judge, that he really wanted me to be out of the office. He just, how do you say, statutes of limitation, it's called in English? Mm-hmm. When something, time had passed, right. It's called statute of limitation. That's right. He said, look, you're in total violation of law 285 and it's incontestable. But I don't think they wanted to get involved into that thing at the time where the U.S. government was helping the Lebanese government fight ISIS.
Right.
So they have to look at those facts.
The enemy of my enemy.
Right. It was not the right time. Okay. So they let me go and I left. That's it. And the whole case is closed.
But do you feel that you can go forward and make films now?
I'm going to go back and do it over and over because those people don't scare me. Even though their intimidation tactic, and I'm not talking about the Lebanese government. I'm talking about the BDS movement.
Right.
Which I probably shouldn't talk about it because it's passed. The film has gotten a lot further than they wished. They tried to stop it. They couldn't. They tried to stop it from getting nominated to the Oscar. They couldn't. They tried to have me arrested. It didn't work. So we won the battles. We really did. And the film became the number one at the box office in Lebanon.
So you came to the States to just roll back to the beginning and you fell in with Quentin Tarantino?
It was in 1990. I was called by my friend Jamie Beardsley, who was a producer, and she says, I would like you to work on this film. And she said, it's a very, very tiny budget and it's a first time filmmakers and I would love it if you help me out. So I meet this guy, Quentin. It was his first film and we read the script and we honestly, when I read the script, I had no idea, it is a work of art or a totally bogus script. You don't know. It was so innovative.
You worked on several Tarantino movies.
I did all his films, including Jackie Brown. And after that, I decided that I did not want to work as an assistant camera anymore. And I went to writing. But I went to good school. It was a great school.
The Quentin Tarantino school?
Yeah. I mean, our films don't look alike at all.
At all,
but,
yeah.
But somehow, Quentin leaves you with a great, strong impression. It's the compulsiveness of his character. That's how I see it.
Your next thing is Camp David. Once again, you're jumping into this pot of conflict.
Look, I've always been so curious about what happened behind closed doors. I've done a lot of research on the peace treaty that happens between the Palestinians and the Israelis. The first one was with James Baker, if you remember, who was the Secretary of State during George Bush the father. In 1991, James Baker went on in the Middle East really seeking to have a peace treaty. And he's gotten so close, actually, very, very close to working a deal. I believe had George Bush the father won his second term, we probably would have succeeded in having a serious peace in the Middle East. It resulted in what was at that time called the Madrid Peace Accord. I did a lot of research on it and I wrote a screenplay about it. I call it Man in the Middle. I thought that the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is still a bit difficult to make it into a movie still because the spirit of the spectator is not ready yet. So I start investigating into what was the peace treaty that happens that actually was successful and still holding on, that Carter, when he made Camp David. So I'm starting to do some research around that subject from a lot of books. There's so many books written about it and so many interesting books about it. So I think I would like to tackle that subject for the time being.
Ziad Duwairi is the director of The Insult. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can subscribe to The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts at kcrw.com/podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.